can all mysteries be explained? Almost 60 years ago, my aunt and uncle were married. She was a refined North Carolinian woman, the daughter of a senator, a law school graduate. She was always well-read. She was a fantastic cook and the most gracious of hostesses. He was from Tacoma, back in the days before the Pacific Northwest was trendy and full of espresso bars. He graduated with a degree in civil engineering, and his favorite things were cigars, horse racing, and fishing. The more remote the stream or creek, the better the trout. How they fell in love, how they stayed married for almost 60 years until my aunt's death in 2016 remains a mystery in my family. Some of the most brilliant minds on the planet have spent days and hours and decades contemplating and theorizing about the origins of the universe. Physicists and astrophysicists have created a new subcategory, particle physics, and have given all sorts of stellar beings excellent names like red dwarf, black hole, wormhole, primordial soup, and quark. They have posited all sorts of theories about what happened at the particle level to create the universe, but in the end, most will tell you that despite all the extraordinary knowledge that we have, the origin of the universe remains a mystery. And the transfiguration of Jesus, is that a mystery too? It's a weird story and not one of my favorites. But here it is again, the Sunday marking the end of the season of light, Epiphany, and the Sunday before the beginning of the darker season of Lent. The three synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, all tell the story with a few details tweaked by each author. In each of these gospels, the preceding story, 8 days after these things, the preceding story is about Jesus predicting his death and telling the disciples that they must carry their own Christ crosses if they are to follow him. And in each of the three gospels, the transfiguration is followed by a story of Jesus coming down the mountain and healing a child who's been possessed by a spirit. We can attempt to unravel the mystery of the transfiguration in different ways. We might say that in Jesus' time and in places in the world today, people experienced altered states of consciousness, a trance-like event in which one sees things that are impossible, but the brain thinks that it actually is possible and real. Gods and spirits reside in this alternate reality, and some scholars identify the transfiguration of Jesus as a communal vision that three of Jesus' disciples have in this simultaneously experienced altered state of consciousness. Or, to unravel the mystery, we might turn to a different means of biblical interpretation and heed the words of womanist scholar Dr. Will Gaffney, who writes, "For more than 1,000 years, Christians in the Holy Land have identified Mount Tabor as the site of the Transfiguration," not the one here, the one over there. "The holy ground of Mount Tabor has been made holier still by the appearance of two archetypal prophets from each end of the spectrum in Israel. Moses, the lawgiver, represents the proclamation prophecy, and Elijah, the wonder worker, represents performance prophecy, and Jesus of Nazareth, Mary's child, is the inheritor of both their mantles. Who wouldn't want to stay on the mountain with them? I know I wish I were there," she writes. Or we might heed the words from this sermon by 18th century preacher George Whitefield. "We say a man is as his company. Persons, by conversing together, frequently catch each other's tempers. And if you have a mind to imbibe the divine temper, pray much. And as Christ's garments became white and glittering, so shall your souls get a little of God's light to shine on them." I'm sure that sermon went on for about 4 more hours. That's all I'm quoting of that one. So, a vision, a story about Jesus' identity, a call to prayer. The Transfiguration is a bit like that elephant being described by people wearing blindfolds. We might understand a part of it, but understanding the whole of it still eludes us. For me, the greater mystery is why this story is in the gospel and what, if any, relevance it has for us today. Why is this story in the gospel? Why is this story in the gospel? I think it may be there to give the reader or the hearer hope. Remember that in all three Gospels, Jesus has just told his disciples that he must suffer and be killed before he rises again. And then he tells them that if they really want to follow them, they must pick up their own crosses. And then a few days later, the Transfiguration happens on a mountaintop apart from the others. And then they come down the mountain and Jesus faces the deep needs of humanity again. Perhaps the disciples, still reeling from Jesus telling them that he will be killed, need to be reminded of the fullness of who he is. He has picked up the mantle of law and prophecy from Moses and Elijah. Like Moses, his face glows in the presence of God. And as at his baptism, the voice of God proclaims that Jesus is God's chosen one. And disciples need to listen to him. And then they come down the mountain and they see this extraordinary prophet, the Son of God, approached by the rabble of the crowds. They see his compassion and his power as he heals a child. Now, maybe the gospel writers tell the story of the Transfiguration because it's one of the many stories about the power of God and the love of God, which work together to heal humanity and to give hope. But does that resonate for us today? I mean, let's be honest. This is a weird story. Does this weird story about a communal experience of an altered state of consciousness make a difference for you and me, who come to this story with some faith? Or does it make a difference to the rest of the world who wonder about all this religion stuff because of weird stories like this? Perhaps Dr. Gaffney has a word for us in all of this. She identifies herself as a womanist scholar, which is to say, as a Black woman who is a feminist. And as a Black woman, she reads the Bible from a perspective very different from my own. She, like all of us, brings her unique experience to the task of interpreting the scripture and trying to unravel the mystery of stories like this. She describes the Transfiguration as being a bit like Mardi Gras, a great party that Peter, James, and John never want to leave, revelry, jazz, and king cake all the time. But that's not life, she reminds us. And she goes on. And there, at the base of the mountain, Jesus gives them another glimpse of God. He shows them God in service. God revealed in the glory of the cloud, attended by the holy ancestors, is also the God who ministers to the desperately ill. Jesus came down from that mountain because his sisters and his brothers needed him. I needed him, you needed him, the world needed him, we need him. And Peter and James and John needed to learn how to be the church in the valley, in the field, in the streets, and in the trenches. As we descend into the Lenten Valley, she concludes, as we descend into the Lenten Valley from the mountaintop of Epiphany, may we be the ones to meet the needs we encounter. This story may have implications for us as believers, as people who believe that Jesus was the Son of the all-powerful God, and it may have different implications for us as followers of Jesus, who desire to live in the way that he calls us to, in a way that involves love and healing. As someone who believes in God, which is to say, I believe that God exists, I believe that God is eternal and powerful. This story reminds me of one way we see God's power, glowing, brighter than the sun, able to summon up ancestors long dead, able to speak from a cloud, able to make that spark that set off the Big Bang, able to cement the 60-year marriage of complete opposites, able to love a pretty faulty humanity. And as a follower of Jesus, this story reminds me of what is asked of those who would follow. We are called to rest sometimes, to go off to pray, and to listen to Jesus. We're also called to come back to the crowds and to pray not by bowing our heads and speaking silently, but to pray by doing things like feeding hungry people and advocating for laws and policies that will give all a better life. As followers of Jesus, we listen to him, and maybe we'll hear him say, you have these gifts. You have these passions. Use them for good. Use them for those who aren't able to live as fully. And before we know it, who knows? We may be glowing too, to the glory of God.